Pascal spinning. Look at the job to create space. Put it in the bump and send that young man to the line. Boy, is he fun to watch.
.351. Tony Allen stopped away by Cauley Stein to the floor. He dives. What an effort! Collison, the lob. Oh, beautiful basketball by the King.
Richardson changing directions and getting to the basket and scoring. How about the rookie Malachi Richards?
You're now listening to The King's Court on Dash Radio, presented by SackKingsNation.com. Here are your hosts, Vince Miracle and Joe Morgan.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to The King's Court. I'm your host, Vince Miracle. Joining me, as always, is the one and only Joe Morgan. Joe, what's going on?
Oh, man, what a great week we had for the NBA fans among us. I mean, the NBA draft was super exciting. It's always fun to watch, so I don't know. I'm pretty stoked. Pretty stoked to watch it. Pretty stoked to talk about it. So,
yeah, I mean, it's been a pretty eventful week, to say the least. I mean, the NBA draft has just passed, so we're going to be recapping that night, which was a pretty exciting night for the Sacramento Kings and its fan base. And then you also look into what's coming up on July 1st, which is what, 7 days away from right now, 6 days away from right now. And that's going to be pretty crazy because free agency opens up, and we'll talk about that probably on the second half of this show. But let's go ahead and start off with the first thing, Joe. Sacramento Kings entered Thursday, June 22nd's NBA draft with two first-round picks and a second-round pick at pick number 34. They actually changed things up a little bit. They picked at number 5. They picked De'Aaron Fox, and we'll talk about him in just a second. But then they traded away their number 10 pick to the Portland Trail Blazers for pick number 15 and pick number 20. And they still kept their second-round pick. But first things first. At number 5, the Sacramento Kings selected De'Aaron Fox, the point guard out of Kentucky. Joe, what was your initial reactions?
The same reaction as everybody else here. Just listen. I don't know who all saw the Twitter where De'Aaron saw the reaction of the fans and said, this is love. But honestly, he's the guy that everybody wanted in the first place. He's the guy that Sacramento was chasing. The most important thing about getting him was that they didn't trade up to do it. They held tight. They didn't listen to all the smoke screens. They didn't give away assets, and they got who they wanted anyway. So, I don't know. I couldn't applaud them more for a good draft night and staying pat at 5 and taking what fell, and what fell was what they wanted. So,
yeah, I mean, Vlade Divac said that, and I don't fully believe it, that even if they had the number 1 pick, they would have still chosen De'Aaron Fox. I don't believe that. And, you know, that's just kind of like, oh, I'm hyping up my guy right here. But no, it was a really, really good pick. You know, just as much as our listeners know, that I've been high on De'Aaron Fox for a very long time now. And yeah, it was awesome to see him fall to the Kings, because this team needed a mindset change, a culture change, and a leader. And I think De'Aaron Fox, I know that the shooting woes are there, but the intangibles that he brings and the leadership mindset that he brings, And the fact that he can, you know, I think the one thing that doesn't get overlooked, and yes, shooting is a big part of today's game, but so is pace. And De'Aaron Fox comes in there, and he's already going to be pushing the pace in this league. And I think that's something that you're really going to want on a team when you have the Thin Towers and Willie Cauley-Stein and Scalabrine are there next to De'Aaron Fox. Again, I bring those two people up because those are all both Kentucky players as well. The one thing I have to say about this, Joe, is that, like, I was posting on Twitter a lot because I was talking to a lot of, you know, people that I know that cover the Suns, and honestly, and I was telling you when we were watching the draft, like, there was a growing suspicion that Fox could have been taken there, that it was Fox or Isaac, because they didn't know, there was like the GM didn't really want to pick up a player like a Josh Jackson, where there is off the court issues right now that's going on, right, about what happened about him and that other college basketball player. And I was hearing that, like, maybe that was the two that they had to choose from. I think that was just kind of coming up because they were looking at trade scenarios, and that's kind of why that came up. But it was something that I guess the Suns were really considering. But Josh Jackson made a lot of sense for the Suns, and I think De'Aaron Fox makes a lot of sense for the Sacramento Kings here. And honestly, once we get onto this next part, I think this was the obvious pick, though, right? Like, no one's too shocked, but everyone's excited.
No, everybody kind of knew this was coming. If he fell, he was the Kings' pick. It would have been more shocking had they taken anybody else. He was absolutely who the Kings were taking. At you know, again, as long as he fell, and everybody kind of knew that. Everybody, all the mock drafts had him there. It was just a matter of whether or not anybody above them decided to pull the trigger on him. And since they didn't, I can't imagine a better fit than De'Aaron Fox on the Sacramento Kings. Not to mention, the last time the Kings took a Kentucky guy at number 5, turned out pretty good.
Oh, yeah? Who was that player?
Might have been that Boogie Cousins kid.
Was he a pretty good player, or was he a player that they just traded away and they don't know how really good he was?
You can't argue that he's an amazing player. Now, the difference, in my opinion, is the 4 kids that they got this year all seem to be super high-character, team-first kind of guys. And so, you know, if they can get that same talent level and he's going to be a team-first kind of guy, that sounds pretty good to me.
No, he's a really good player. I'm just joking around. But, okay, so we move down to number 10, right? The Sacramento Kings had the 10th pick. It's the pick that they got for DeMarcus Cousins. And, you know, I think, like many fans out there, I was thinking that they were going to cherish that pick a little bit more than most. And instead, when you got to 10 and the Kings were on the clock, they had actually traded it away to the Portland Trail Blazers in what I thought was a very, very smart move, because at 10, there was guys like Donovan Mitchell, Zach Collins, who was selected by the Kings at number 10, but really went to the Portland Trail Blazers. OG Anunoby, Luke Kennard, a lot of talented players there, right? But nothing that really filled the need for the Kings. Like, they didn't need to add a top 10 with upside power forward in Zach Collins. We're going to get to another one that they did select at 20 and why that one made more sense. They didn't need to get a guy like Zach Collins. They didn't need to add another combo guard and Donovan Mitchell or Luke Kennard. And it was kind of a reach to take the player that they did take at number 15 in Justin Jackson that high, and to see that you can also get a number 20 pick. It was just a smart move by the Kings. So again, they traded away that number 10 pick for pick number 15 and pick number 20 to the Portland Trail Blazers. And with that 15th pick, they picked up Duke's Justin Jackson. Joe, what were your thoughts? Sorry, not Duke's, North Carolina's Justin Jackson. Joe, what were your thoughts?
I think that's the guy they wanted in the first place, and to be able to trade back to get him and you know, add the extra pick, I think it was a brilliant move. Obviously, it's hard to always grade drafts because, of course, nobody's played a single minute since the draft has happened. So to give an actual grade, you don't know. But if that's the guy they wanted and they added an extra asset, brilliant move. Absolutely brilliant move.
I'm not going to say that's the player that they wanted, because we really don't know. Because especially at 10, like, there's a lot of fans out there that thought that the Kings should have taken Malik Monk, who was available and actually slipped outside of the top 10 to number 11, where he's actually going to be playing with a really good team in the Charlotte Hornets. Now that they got Dwight Howard and Malik Monk and Kemba Walker and Nicholas Batum, they got a nice little roster. I don't think he should be as mad as he was, but hindsight's 20/20, we'll find out.
A lot of people might think that, but in our offline conversations, I kind of know your feelings on it, and I think we're both glad that that didn't go to the Kings.
I mean, I wouldn't have been terrible at number 10. I just, again, everyone kind of knows. I've said it on the record. I've said it off the record. I'm not a huge fan of Malik Monk. He's a Kings player. Like, that, he's a Kings player. I should say that a little bit better, right? Like, potentially has a handle, could shoot the basketball, is athletic, you know, undersized shooting guard. It just didn't make much sense for the Kings, and that's why I think they traded back to Justin Jackson, who did come out and work out for the Kings leading up to the draft. And you know, he's a player that was just the ACC Player of the Year. He helped lead his team to a championship this year during the March Madness tournament. And he also shot 37% from three-point range this past season for the Tar Heels. I think that's something you have to take notice on. And that's also something that, again, we're bringing up this culture change, you're bringing up this youth movement. You need people that are winners, at least have the mindset of being a winner. De'Aaron Fox was that. Now you got a guy in Justin Jackson who just helped lead his team to a championship. He's also been in college for 3 years, and of those 3 years, he has seen his numbers go up. As a freshman, he averaged 10.7 points, sophomore 12.2, and now as a junior before now leaving, he averaged 18.3 points and got 32 minutes per game. Now, I'm going to bring up some stats here just because this is the downfall of what he did in college, right? Like, shot 47.7% his freshman year. His sophomore year, it went down again to 46.6. And then this past year, he went down to 44.3. Now, I say that because that's been getting a lot of negative attention from outside media, from outside of Sacramento. I listen to different shows. I listen to everybody, what they talk about, right? And sorry about my voice, guys. It's kind of bad, but what can I do? I was screaming, playing basketball the other night. When you look at those numbers, yes, it sucks to see that his field goal percentage is going down. But you also have to look at the fact that he's taking more shots. He went from 8.7 attempts to 10.4 to 14.9 this past season. And on top of that, he went from a 29.2% three-point shooter as a sophomore to jumping that up to 37% is something you have to applaud. The work ethic is there. I love the interview he did that Jason Jones reposted after, I believe, their introductory press conference about how he says that he has his family and God above basketball, but that he feels that he needs to work hard because they're the people that gave him the skill to play basketball. That whole entire interview was amazing. I was applauding him for that. And I think that you got a grinder here at number 15, and you didn't have to reach for him at number 10 because now you got another pick that we're going to talk about here in a second at number 20. But any final thoughts here on Justin Jackson?
Yeah, everybody's talking about how his shooting percentage went down, but it's because he changed his mechanics. He actually tweaked his mechanics, and of course you're going to get a little bit worse when you try a new thing, but obviously it started working there towards the end. You go from a 29, what did you say, 29.2 to a 37? I mean, from 3, I'm sorry. And yeah, he had to tighten up, and he had to learn a new way to do things. But now he's getting the ball out better. It's coming out cleaner. It's coming out faster. It's doing all the things that you expect a guy to move to the NBA to be able to do. Okay, you have a problem, fix it. And that's the kind of work ethic that you see in this young man. And that's what I wanted to see more than percentages, more than numbers. You know, it's not about what you can and can't do. It's about what you can learn. And he's coachable. He's willing to learn. So, you know,
there's concerns, though, about the size. Like, he's a small forward. His defense has been something that, you know, has been applauded, right? Like, in college, he was a pretty good defender. At the NBA level, especially with the small forwards that are in the game right now and in the Western Conference, which is the conference that he's going to be playing in now that he's with the Kings, I don't know if he's able to step right in and play that position. I think of him more as like a Swiss Army knife. He's a jack-of-all-trades type of guy. He's not good at one thing. And, you know, you're talking about the three-point shooting, and I just brought up his percentages, and you did as well. When he came into college, that was the one thing everyone was looking at him for. Like, this guy was a knockdown shooter. He was shooting 30% as a freshman, which isn't great, you know, especially for a forward slash guard, but it wasn't terrible. And then to see that go down to 29.2 and then to bring it back up to 37, again, it speaks to his work ethic, and that's why I bring up the deficiencies here when he goes to the next level, because defensively it may be that he's a problem. He may actually only be able to play as a guard more than a small forward, even though I believe he's 6'8". That could be an issue for him right away, and I think that's why when we get to the second half of the show and we start talking about free agency and how they're going to have to attack their roster and the players that they're going to have to bring in is going to be very interesting to, I think, Justin Jackson's development as an NBA player and as a defender on the wing and his ability to play small forward. But offensively, I think this guy's got the skill. If he can keep that three-point percentage up, even if it drops down to 35%, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. But to keep it in that range, the fact that he's a guy that can get to the lane, he doesn't even need to finish like off the backboard. He does these floaters. He's crafty. He's always looking to pass. He dribbles with his head up. There's things you got to love about this guy. You just have to know that, like De'Aaron Fox and his shooting, that's the most glaring thing. I also think his size is going to be because he finished so well in college, if he's going to be able to do that at the next level. I think with Justin Jackson, you're not worried about his finishing ability because he knows how to finish in multiple different ways, whether that be a floater or off the glass. It's more of, is he going to have the strength to be able to take the hits from the small forwards that are there, like a Kawhi Leonard, like a Kevin Durant, like a LeBron James, who's not really in the Western Conference, but I had to bring his name up. Is he going to be able to finish around those type of people banging into him and then doing the floater, or is he going to be able to finish around the rim a little bit more stronger than he did in college? And those are things I'm going to be looking at. Maybe even during summer league. So,
well, and he doesn't like to initiate contact, but we've talked about this with a lot of prospects. If there's one thing that will absolutely get better in the NBA, it's your size, it's your strength. So hopefully that does come along at a speed that actually makes him able to do those things, I guess is the right words. He like anybody, like any 19-year-old kid, 18-year-old kid coming into the league, you're playing against 25, 30-year-old men. And, of course, you got to get stronger. Of course, you have to get bigger. So size, I mean, it matters, but I'm not – you can't teach height, but you can always add weight. And hopefully that happens.
Let's move on to pick number 20, where the Kings took a flyer. They took a flyer on this guy. He averaged, what, 3.9 points, 3.8 rebounds. And that's Harry Giles of Duke. Honestly, when I heard the pick, and I there was a guy like OG Anunoby that was available, I was kind of just shrugged. I was like, I get it. It's a good pick, and now it's been a couple days since the draft, and I'm at the point now where it's like, I get it. It's a good pick. It's a flyer. Joe, what were your thoughts?
Well, we talked about it about four picks before it happened. I said, you know, I wouldn't mind if they took this Giles guy. And I still think it's a great pick because it's either a home run or it's a strikeout. But the beauty of it is you got it as a free pick. It was like a lottery pick that you found on the floor, or a lottery ticket that you found on the floor, because trading back from 10, they got Justin Jackson like they wanted at 15, but then they also get this free pick. So why wouldn't you take a home run swing on a guy who, if he works out, he's going to be a big hit. You know, it's hard to call somebody a home run when they're young, but, you know, again, he's 19 years old, so... But still, it could be a home run pick. If he was healthy, where do you think he would have gone in the draft? If it wasn't for his knees, he would have gone in the top couple picks. Well, okay, hopefully his knees hold. If they do, this was an absolute home run. If they don't, well, it was a free ticket that you found on the floor, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Left ACL, left meniscus. Oh, no, I believe it's the right. One of the two. I mean, he's had so many surgeries. It's just
ridiculous. Well, it was his left knee. He tore his ACL, MCL, and meniscus, and that was at the under-16 championship. And then he did it again. So, I mean,
No, and then he did it to the right knee.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he had to get, like, arthro-something surgery that Alien Voisin tried to ask him in his introductory press conference, and it was got heck of literal, like, did they take something from your knee, hip bone? I thought that was weird. Anyways.
But he did that as a high school senior. And then did he not play much in college because of that? Well, of course not. But it's a year removed from that happening. A year and a half, really. Because it was his first game of his senior year that he tore his ACL. So really, let's call it 2 years removed from that. Is he healthy? Again, you're not going to know, but obviously, you know, the draft room, the war room of each NBA team obviously has doctors on staff, and they're going to know more than us laymen just reading a Draft Express or reading an ESPN article. You're going to read the highlights, but, you know, they have doctors on staff. They know what's going on. So it's worth a swing.
You say that, but it's pretty weird that, you know, different teams come up with and different doctors come up with different assessments.
Well, I was just talking to somebody in a front office this morning, and they were talking about how they pretty much had him at the 15 to 20 range. So he fell to the bottom of the range where they thought he was going to be, and they picked him up cheap. I mean, it's you got him at the bottom of the range. Anytime you get a guy and it's the bottom of the range where teams are thinking he's going to be, then it was a bargain. And if it works, then it works. And if it doesn't, I mean, I have every faith that this is going to work. But of course, that's based on just the fact that, again, if teams' doctors are saying you're good to go, then I assume that you are. I'm not a doctor. I can't, you know, I can't speak to that, but I can only know that they've obviously done their due diligence. You're not going to, you know, you're not going to risk a couple million dollars on a guy and not have done any research into him.
I looked at this pick, and it's like the scout pick last year. Yep. It was someone that was falling. They had a terrible college career, one season there. But everyone knew, like, going in, he was one of the most highly touted high school players to come out into college. The way he was able to finish, I believe Fran Fraschilla or Jay Billis, I can't remember who it was on TV, compared him to Chris Webber. You know what I mean? He has a handle. You can look up videos of when he was younger. He has a handle for a big man. He has post moves. He has a motor. I understand why you take the flyer on him, especially at 20, because – again, everyone knows the talent that he was at his younger age. For the since he was, I believe I can't remember what article I read. I know it was on ESPN, but they said that since he was, I believe, 10 years old, he's been told he's the best in his division until he up to the age of, you know, his freshman year in college. And so this is kind of like a redemption for him. And I believe they even said that on draft night, where when the Kings picked him, he's like, you have to applaud this guy for being picked in the first round, because his entire life he's been told he's the best. And then to suffer all these injuries and have to overcome this much adversity, and now he's going to be going to a team where he's going to have time to develop, and he's going to be getting minutes in this rebuild. And I think you have to admire the Kings for bringing that type of player in, someone with the chip on their shoulder. And again, we talked about it with the first two picks. De'Aaron Fox has the mindset of a winner. Justin Jackson has just brought, you know, UNC a championship, and has a mindset of a winner. And now you get to number 20. He has a chip on his shoulder. I'm supposed to be one of the best. I was supposed to be projected to be one of these top guys, and I'm falling into the 20s in the first round. And some people even had me in the second round if I probably didn't get picked there. So you have, again, they're building a culture change. I think this fits it. For those wondering about his stats, he played in 26 games for Duke, averaged 11.5 minutes per game, shot 57.7% from the field, again, 3.9 points, 0.7 blocks, and 3.8 rebounds per game. Not a lot to go off there. They're really just going off the fact that he was this type of player. He was athletic. He had a motor. He had a handle. He had passing ability. Again, Fran Fischel, I believe, compared him to – no, I'm going to go with Jay Billis compared him to a Chris Webber. I hated that they said that on TV, because I think the expectations now are going to be a little too high for Kings fans. But, again, I think that you have to see it and understand. You have to see the player, understand why the Kings are taking him, and with a culture change, bringing in a player who's as young as he is, that has a chip on his shoulder after he's been told he's the best, to fall that low. I think he's ready. I think he's ready to put in work, and I think the Kings were in a position where the flyer pick was the right pick.
Well, and he only got 11.5 minutes, but that's because he was playing behind a senior, a really good senior. So he got 11.5
And they were
minutes.
Taking it easy on his knees.
Yeah, like, I mean, you got 3.5 points. Well, it's 11 minutes, man. That's such a small sample size that doesn't even – you might as well just throw away that year. That year doesn't exist. And now he's starting anew with the Kings, and let's see what he does. Before any you know, grades can be given on this guy, you're going to have to see what he does in Summer League. And, hey, that's only around the corner. So we'll know soon enough.
Let's move on down to the second round, where at pick number 34, the Sacramento Kings took Kansas point guard Frank Mason III.
The National Player of the Year.
I think that everyone knew this was going to happen. They were just hoping that his name fell that low. And the more, you know, I saw it happening, I thought teams were going to take him. And I just have this weird feeling like they're just, I want to go to Sacramento, because of what happened here in Sacramento. Everyone knows about the tweet story. And if you don't, you got to go on Frank Mason's timeline on Twitter and just look at the story. I mean, that was awesome. And that was just an awesome story. He became a fan favorite right after that. And you look at his numbers, and you just have to look and see the fact that as a senior, this guy is coming in mature, and he's good. He is a good basketball player. Joe, what were your thoughts when the Kings selected Frank Mason III?
It's the number one thing against him, and, you know, this has happened a couple times, but, again, you can't gain height, and that's his number one, you know, kind of hit against him right now. But the guy is amazing. I mean, in the pick and roll, he's amazing. He's a great player. So, and again, what you said about Giles a second ago, he has a chip on his shoulder because he has to prove that he's good enough. And I think being picked in the second round will continue that chip to be there. And again, I'm really, really excited to see him here in July and what he brings when he's pitted against NBA level talent.
I you can't look at his numbers in college and not think he's a good basketball player. I mean, since a sophomore, he's been getting 30 minutes a night. He's a three-point shooting. His three-point shooting is something that you just go, wow, That's amazing. 32.7% as a freshman, 42.9% as a sophomore, 38.1% as a junior, and then shooting 47.1% on 4.8 attempts from three-point range as a senior. That's crazy. And then to still shoot 49% from the field on 13.7 attempts per game. This guy is good, and I'm not going to do what everyone's been doing already. I see you guys on Twitter. I'm reading you guys, all right? He's 5'11". He's a good three-point shooter. He's got a handle. He can score.
He's 6 foot now.
Oh, and shoes? Okay. Whatever. All right. I'm not going to say – he's not Isaiah Thomas, okay? I don't want to say he's Isaiah Thomas. What I do think he could be, I think he can be a better Darren Collison. And I don't think that's the bad. I don't think that's a bad thing at all. I think Darren Collison was a good player. He still averaged 4.2 rebounds per game, 5.2 assists last season, and 1.3 steals. Was named the Big 12 Player of the Year. I think Frank Mason III could have been a first round pick. He could have been a first round pick easily. He fell to the Kings at number 34. I think he steps in automatically and gets an NBA contract. Not a two way contract. And I think he's De'Aaron Fox's backup right when the season begins. And that will be something that will be a topic for the second half of this show. But I think the numbers prove that Mason, and I think in summer league you're going to see it as well, he's a player that's ready to step into the NBA. And that three-point shooting, his basketball IQ, where he plays within himself, he looks for the open man. He looks to play for his teammates but can also knock down the shot. He can be a George Hill type of player. I think defensively, of course, he's going to have his issues because of his size, so I don't want to say George Hill because George Hill's a pretty good defender. But knockdown shooter, plays within himself, willing passer, hustles for everything, super athletic. He brings a maturity at such a young age. And again, that's something that they're needing in this youth movement. They need mature, winning mentalities. And I think Frank Mason brings that and then some. And so I was excited when the Kings picked him up at number 34. This was a great draft for the Kings, hands down. This is one of their best drafts in a very long time.
No, they did an amazing job. And my favorite part about it is watching the national media finally raise their heads up and see that a lot of the dysfunction that's been here in the past is gone. And one draft does not make a clean slate. One draft does not cure all ills, but it's a nice start. And it's people. I had a little Twitter thing with somebody the other day, and they said, you know, don't count your chickens until they hatch. And I said, yeah, but at least Sacramento finally has some big eggs, and it doesn't have to be perfect to be better than it was. And again, and that's kind of all that can be said right now is you understand that there's 15 roster spots, okay. That's 7% of your roster for each person. They just got 28% of their roster out of the draft. If Frank Mason, you know, gets a contract, which, again, I don't see why he wouldn't. So 28% of their roster just changed overnight. And, again, it's a young team. It is a exciting team. And there's somebody at each position that should excite people. There's a lot of potential at each position. Now, we've had that conversation before. What is potential worth? Because potential isn't worth a lot of games in the win column. But it's still nice to see when it hasn't been there in the past.
I think you also have to applaud the front office right here. And I'm not talking about Vlade Divac. I'm talking about Scott Perry, who is now the executive VP right now next to Vlade Divac. I think you can tell he had his hands all over this draft. They wanted to come in there and make the right moves and also bold moves, and they wanted to find the right players. And I think when you saw what Scott Perry did back in the day with that Detroit Pistons team, you can just tell he looks for winners, and he brought those type of players here. And I think Vlade Divac, with that old mindset of I want to have players that want to play with one another, and something that not a lot of people are talking about that I think is really good to hear is that De'Aaron Fox played with Justin Jackson and AAU. He has known Harry Giles since the fifth grade. I mean, these are players that know each other because they've grown up together in these ranks and growing their talents together. And the fact that Justin Jackson, the 15th pick, and De'Aaron Fox, the fifth pick, have already played together before, and to see that they're going to go back to that, I mean, that's something you have to applaud and be excited for as well. If you're a Kings fan, you're like, that's awesome. Let's see what they can do, because you're looking at this team now with those four picks. Those four picks are going to be on an NBA, on the Kings roster next season, playing in NBA games, and they're about to go to summer league. I'm going to say it right now, Joe. I'm calling it. Kings are at least making it to the championship game in Vegas summer league.
All right, I'll tell you guys a little secret. I usually buy my summer league tickets when I arrive at the arena on the first day. I just buy the whole pass for everything. I actually, because of knowing how good this team is going into summer league, I actually just this morning went on and bought my championship game ticket to make sure that they didn't sell out, because they more than likely will be there, and it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Are you trying to say that are you saying championship game is the lowest they can get in summer league? Like, if they don't make it to the championship game, are you disappointed?
Oh, it's a failure.
No, it's not.
No, it's not. You're right. But it's, just either way, I want to be at that game. But it's I'd really like to see them go far in this. You got Jason March coaching it. You got, 80% of their roster will be there. It's almost the starting five on opening night might be the starting five for the first day of summer league. So it's going to be pretty interesting.
All right, guys. Now we want to hear from you. What were your thoughts on the Kings' exciting draft night? I want to hear all the excitement that you guys had. Are you excited about Justin Jackson? Did you think the Kings should have picked Malik Monk at 10 instead of choosing or trading with the Portland Trail Blazers and getting picked 15 and 20? Let me hear your thoughts on Harry Giles. Are you worried about those knees? And, of course, let me hear your thoughts on Frank Mason III. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to start talking about what's happening on July 1st and how the Kings are going to be attacking a very interesting free agency with a lot of money but not a lot of roster spots available. So we'll talk about that right after the break.
I wanted to talk to you today about GlassesUSA.com. GlassesUSA.com believes that glasses can really change the way you look and feel. Unfortunately, when too many people have their fingers in the pie, the price of glasses can cost a small fortune. By cutting out the middlemen and keeping it simple, they provide their customers with high-quality products at a fair price. In other words, they cut out the store, they cut out the wholesaler, they cut out the lab. It just goes straight from the manufacturer to you. One of the things I love about them is they have such an amazing customer service. In an average of 10 seconds, you're talking to a human being from the time you call. I love that. Too many of these online places, man, you call them, you get a recorded message, blah, blah, blah. At this place, 10 seconds, you're talking to a human being. I love that. Save 55% off any pair of glasses at checkout by using the code ALMIGHTY. So again, glassesusa.com, promo code ALMIGHTY, and you'll get 55% off of any pair of glasses at checkout.
All right, guys, I want to talk to you about BrickHouseIndustries.com. Everyone go to BrickHouseIndustries.com, check out all their apparel from hats, shirts, and socks. And when checking out, be sure to use promo code KingsCourt, and you will get a 10% discount on any of your purchases. And hey, if you want to keep up to date with all of their latest apparel, be sure to check them out on Instagram and on Twitter at BrickHouse_IND. All right, Joe, now we're back. Yeah, this is going to be an interesting conversation. Because I know a lot of people are thinking, hey, the Kings should go after this player. Hey, the Kings should go after that player. They need to stay young, but they need to bring in veterans. I've been talking to Keith Smith. Listen to a show, the NBA Front Office show. It's on the Almighty Baller Network. I don't know if it's on Dash Radio yet or what day it's on. So unfortunately, I can't promote that part, but I am promoting the show. Go check it out, NBA Front Office. Go look it up on iTunes or anything like that. Leave them a rating. And hey, while you're there, leave the rating on this show too. But free agency is coming up on July 1st, and the Kings, I believe, have the most cap space in the NBA at $52.8 million in cap space. And that's after, Rudy Gay is now opted out. He's going to be a free agent. They've waived Anthony Tolliver. They've waived Aaron Aflalo. Langston Galloway has decided to opt out. There's no more Darren Collison. There's no more Ty Lawson. Their contracts have expired. Ben McLemore is a restricted free agent, but this is also under the assumption that the Kings are going to sign all four of their drafted players with De'Aaron Fox, Justin Jackson, Harry Giles, and Frank Mason to an NBA contract. Not a two-way deal where they're going to be bouncing back and forth to the D-League. I think they're going to sign them to true NBA contracts like they did to Malachi Richardson. And they're bringing in Bogdan Bogdanovic this offseason, who, according to James Hamm of CSN, he does not believe that Bogdan will be playing in Summer League because he's still playing actually overseas right now for his country's team. Yeah, I can't pronounce the team name. Sorry, I'm not even going to try. But he's still playing basketball right now overseas, and I believe like right when Summer League begins, their season just ended. So that's going to be something interesting to watch. But this is under the assumption that they sign him as well. So that's five players that they've just signed. They still have Willie Cauley-Stein, Scala Bissier, Garrett Temple, Costa Kufis. Am I missing anybody? I think that's it. All under contract still. I have the whole
guys
roster.
Over 25, you mean? Yeah, there aren't many.
Yeah, no, the guys over 25 is just Garrett Temple and Costa Kufis, who Temple, yeah. I believe, is 31, and Kufis, who I believe is 28. Yeah. So, yeah, not a lot of roster spots there available for the Kings. But here's the roster as it stands. It would be Fox, Mason, Heald, Bogdan, Temple, Jackson, Malachi Richardson, Scala Bissier, Harry Giles, Papa Giannis, Willie Cauley-Stein, and Costa Kufis. That's 12 players. You can only have 15 players on your roster. The Kings have $52.8 million in cap space. They have three roster spots to fill. Five if you count the two-way contracts. I don't know where they're going to spend it.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think Frank Mason may or may not play to a point where he deserves an NBA contract. But I think they're going to probably not be able to give him one because they have so much money to spend. They're going to have to sign somebody else and put him on a two-way.
Even if they put him on a two-way contract, he can still play in games. But again, I was talking to Keith Smith about it. Him and I, we both kind of agree that we don't think he's getting a two-way deal. We believe that the talent that he has and the reason why the Kings really wanted him at 34 was to be the backup because he's a really good complementary piece to what De'Aaron Fox is as a point guard. He's a passing, push the tempo type of point guard where you have off the bench a sharp shooting, plays within himself. Someone said that he plays like a Ty Lawson but shoots like a Darren Collison. So he's a mixture of both, and I think that's a decent way to compare him at 5'11". I believe he's like 185 pounds. I don't see him going to the D League. I don't see a reason why he needs to. I think you already know what he is as a player. Summer League's going to define it all, but you know he's going to be signed to a contract before that or even during that. So that's something you definitely want to keep an eye on. But again, I think they signed him to a real deal. And if so, there's probably maybe a player in Summer League where the Kings decide they want to sign them to a two-way deal because there's undrafted free agents right now that the Kings are looking at that they could have been – if Frank Mason was chosen, hey, we would have chose you. Come play for us. Let's see if we can get you on a contract. We have two-way deals available if we sign Mason to a full NBA contract deal. So this is where everything gets a little shaky here because also Vlade Divac just said that he wanted to bring in veterans to come in, mentor these guys. I thought Anthony Tolliver's tweet was kind of funny because he just kind of did eyeballs. Like eyeball emojis, like you just said you wanted veterans here to mentor these guys and guide them. Why did you let me go?
Yeah.
Which is what I mean. Yeah.
Valid question.
But there's also players that Kings fans are really, really hoping the Kings go. I would say it's like a 60-40 split, maybe 70-30 split that they're hoping Vlade and the front office go after, and that's Otto Porter. He doesn't really bring that veteran leadership, but he's a piece that I don't think he's a franchise centerpiece. I don't think he's a cornerstone piece. I think he's a glue piece. He's the player that you bring in that says, I'm defining my starting five with defense. And I think that would be something that you're looking at where you can have a De'Aaron Fox who looks like he could be a pretty good defender. Size, that I still think is a question mark, but in college, he was a good defender. You can have Buddy Hield, who does have his defensive efficiencies, but then you have him next to Otto Porter and a guy in Willie Cauley-Stein who can block shots. That's something that intrigues me, but is he worth the max? Because that's the only way the Kings are going to get him to move away from a winning team in Washington, in my opinion. He was top three in three-point field goal percentage. You've seen his career continue to go up each season since he's been in the NBA, especially this past year, where he was just phenomenal to watch. Joe, would you be okay with the Kings maxing out Otto Porter?
Oh, 100%. They need somebody to come in. They have the money to burn. Why not try to get a guy, you know, on a fairly long-term deal and pay him? I mean, he's a young guy. He's exactly what they need in the three spot. And, again, I don't see anybody else in that free agency at the three that's really going to fit as well as him.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't know what else the Kings would want. If you're building a culture-changing team like we talked about during the draft portion of the show in the first half, Otto Porter kind of fits that as well, right? He's a young player. He's seen winning, although they lost to the Boston Celtics in the semifinals of the playoffs this past season. But he was a key piece to getting the Wizards there. He continues to build up his offensive game. He's a key component to the Wizards' defensive schemes. And I think if you can pair that with a Dave Joerger, the fact that he can run, the fact that he can shoot, we try and make it best way possible for you guys to understand what this player could be. And I don't really like bringing up the past on Kings because it overhypes sometimes and it kind of gets overblown when I see you guys in the mentions. But he would be a Doug Christie type of piece, a defense on the wing that can do a little bit for you. And I think that's exactly what you want from him. And if you're looking for a young guy that has a winning mentality, like we've been doing with the draft players, and continues to prove that he's a worker, and you can build defensive schemes around him and say, hey, go guard the best player on this team, he can do that for you. And I think he's definitely worth the max for this Sacramento Kings roster. Moving down the list here, other than Otto Porter, there's guys that you can go maybe like a Joe Ingles. Again, that's another restricted free agent that the Kings could look at. One player that I really don't, and I'm on Hoops hype right now just looking up names that are in free agency. I don't want the Kings to go after a Derrick Rose. I don't want the Kings to really go after a Deron Williams. I think interesting players to keep an eye on, though, are Ty Lawson and Darren Collison. Are the Kings willing to bring one of them back and just have Frank Mason be the third guard off the bench? Joe, would you be okay with that?
Yeah, but where do you spend that much money? The problem, it keeps coming back to the money. You have to spend it, and a Darren Collison could get a good piece of it. Ty's not going to get that much, and that cuts down one of your roster spots with not spending enough money. Even if you max out Otto, that leaves you another $20 million to spend on one spot. And who do you look at in free agency to fit that spot? I just don't know.
So it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world for them to do what they were doing with making a contract of a Tolliver or Aaron Aflalo, where, hey, the first year is guaranteed. Like Aaron Aflalo, 2 year, $25 million, right? Get $12.5 million per year, but you only get $1.5 million guaranteed on a team option, right? And that's what the Kings decided to do. They decided to buy him out for that $1.5 million just the other day. That's a smart move because now they have the cap space. They don't have to pay him that $12.5 million. I can see them doing that type of deal with the Ty Lawson because he deserved that money and maybe give him a, 2 year, $16-17 million deal, and then have a $2 million buyout, $3 million buyout in year two. Because I don't think Ty Lawson was terrible for the Kings. I think I would much rather have Darren Collison. But I said this the other day on Twitter. I think Darren Collison needs to view other teams if he wants to be on a winning team. And I think Minnesota would be a really good fit for him. But that's a different story for a different podcast. But I do think Darren Collison and Ty Lawson are players the Kings should be looking at just to come back. Because as much as I think Frank Mason could come in there right away and be a backup to De'Aaron Fox and it's a good complimentary piece, we still don't know what he is. You know what I mean? And you want to have that veteran there. Is Ty Lawson the right guy? I'm not quite sure, but I do think the Kings should at least look at him because I think the point guard market is something that after you get past the key players like a Chris Paul, Kyle Lowry, Drew Holiday, and all of them, it's kind of slim, and the talent level drops off tremendously. And I don't know. I'm not a huge fan of the Kings bringing back Ty Lawson over Darren Collison, but I'd understand why they did it. I'll just leave it at that. Wing player wise, or let's just go veteran wise. I'm just going to name off some players, Joe, and you just let me know if you think the Kings should consider that player. And a lot of them are guards. I'm not going to lie, this is a guard This is a guard-heavy free agency class. Darren Williams.
No.
That's all you got to say. Just no, straight no.
No, it doesn't make any sense to bring in a guard to play in front of the guy that you just drafted, number five, that you want to get as many minutes as you can.
Oh, he does. He plays backup.
You want to see what Frank Mason can do. There's no need. Okay, I'm going to say this now for Kings fans listening. This year is not about how many wins or losses you get. That's important. And I want to see, you know, everybody who has a team that they watch, you want to see them win, obviously. Same time, this year is about getting these guys minutes so that in 2 years they can contend and in 3 years they can have a real shot. It's not about now. Now is, you know, again, this team is going through the eat your vegetables stage of life where you eat your vegetables so that later you can be healthy and good. So, no, you don't want to bring in a guy who's going to be in front of somebody just for the sake of having him.
Thabo Sefolosha.
Oh, man.
I'll say this. I'm okay with the Kings going after Thabo if they do a deal like they did with Anthony Tolliver. He's a 3-and-D guy on the wing. If you can't get Otto Porter, at least get a poor man's version of him. You have to understand why they would go after him. Is he a great piece? No. Is he a piece where you give him that kind of same deal like what you would just kind of give Ty Lawson in my scenario? Maybe you go 2 years, $12.5 million with a $1.3 million buyout in the second year. I'm not quite sure, but I think as a 3-and-D guy, he's someone that the Kings could bring in and you would understand why. Especially because he's a veteran. He's made it to the finals with OKC. So he knows what it takes to win as well.
Still, I guess it depends on what I see brought in during free agency when it comes to the first move. If it is Otto Porter, then no. Then absolutely.
Oh yeah, if it's Otto Porter, then no, because then you got but I'm just saying if you can't get him, then no. How would you feel about the Kings giving a substantial offer? I'm not saying a max deal because he definitely doesn't deserve a max, but I definitely think he's earned his way to some money. And this is a young player that I think a lot of people – you're going to have people say, you got to go pay him, but don't max him out. Jonathan Simmons.
Jonathan Simmons. He had a good postseason for a little bit there. He had a couple games where Pop was all about him.
He's a fun player.
Yeah, well, you know, fun doesn't win games. Fun, I like him, but I don't have enough information to definitively say whether or not. Because yeah, a couple good games is great to watch and fun to watch, but it's not. That doesn't answer the question of whether or not he's actually somebody that you'd want on your team. So, the little information I have on him, no, but I could be persuaded to yes.
I could be okay with it, but there's just too many guard players. He's like a guard wing.
Come back to this, really, though. How much do you pay him?
He's earned money. Patty Mills, I think, would be a good player here as well. I was sticking with the Spurs. Veteran could be that backup. He kind of reminds me of what a Frank Mason can be, so it'd be kind of cool to see him get mentored by him. But, yeah, I would say Patty Mills is a player the Kings should look at as well as a veteran that they can bring in with a winning mentality, especially since he's been with the Spurs. What are your thoughts on Patty Mills?
I don't know, man. I'm trying to give a scenario in my head now where it's somebody that I would want to come in, and he doesn't enter the list. I mean, would I be mad? No, but he doesn't fit. Imagine that Vlade is painting a picture right now. He doesn't fit in that picture.
So you have to spend the money, though. You can't not spend the money. And you can't put all of your eggs in one basket in Otto Porter and not have backup plans. And that's where Patty Mills, Thabo Sefolosha, veterans that have seen winning, that have been a complimentary piece to winning, that can mentor these young guys. And did you just hear my voice fade out right there? That was ridiculous. And they can come in and start doing that. Players that scare me. I have players on this list that scare me that I think the Kings would go after. I mean, I can name you those players, like a Pau Gasol. That doesn't fit it for me. Paul Millsap, who the Kings have been linked to, according to Brian Windhorst of ESPN.
I think that was just a smokescreen.
No, I think that the Kings are really – they've been interested for a long time. Same thing with Pau Gasol. They're going to be interested. I know Pau Gasol's probably going to stay with the Spurs because he won the championship again. But, again, the Kings are showing interest. I think if so many people have talked about it, something's real. You know what I mean? It's like I can bring up a celebrity thing.
What about the other Bogdanovich? What would you think about him coming over?
Doesn't really make much sense. He doesn't play any defense. He would just be a scorer on the wing. I think that's saying – what Malachi Richardson probably could be is the worst case, which would be Bojan Bogdanovic. And I don't see that being a good fit because he's also had never been on a winning team. His most recent time with a winning team was just this past season, just the ending half of it with the Washington Wizards. The prior 3 years, he's been with the Brooklyn Nets, who's just been trash, and they just said, hey, here's the basketball. We need some points. Go ahead and shoot whenever you want to. And then he's going to bring that mentality like, hey, I can score. This is a bad team that's trying to come up and need points. I can see him being a ball stopper for this team. Don't like it. Same reason why I'm going to bring up this next name, who I don't think the Kings should try and bring back. I know a lot of Kings fans love him. He had his swan song here in Sacramento, and that's Tyreke Evans. I think the Kings should not pursue Tyreke Evans this offseason.
No, I don't think so either. Again, he just doesn't fit the painting that Vlade's – the picture that Vlade's painting.
That's really it. The last player that I don't think the Kings should go after because he's going to cost a lot of money, and the only way I can see them bringing this player in is, one, they have to miss out on Otto Porter, and two, they just need to spend this money – and three, they need to have it to where maybe in the, maybe not in the second year, but in the third year, there's a either there has to be a buyout or a team option on this guy's contract. I wouldn't mind the Kings bringing him in. It just scares me on the amount that they would have to pay and the contingencies that he might have on his deal. And that's Andre Iguodala. I think he would be a solid addition to this young team, someone that can teach the young players, someone who has just been to the championship. To the finals 3 years in a row with the Warriors, someone who's looking to try and get paid. Kings have showed interest in him. Everyone remembers the summer where I'm going to bring up his name. Pete D'Alessandro pulled that offer away from him, and then he decided to go to the Warriors. So that was kind of a heartbreak thing. I know a lot of fans really like him. I could see the Kings showing interest. I think he'd be a good pick, especially around these young guys. It just comes down to how much money and how much is going to be guaranteed to him.
Looking down the small forward list and trying to find character guys, you know, small forward free agency list and trying to find character guys, there's a name that pops out to me that's going to make a lot of Kings fans mad. What would you think about Omri coming back?
It wouldn't be the worst thing in the world, but he doesn't really fit, right? Like, it's just another shooter. He doesn't play any defense. It's just a running gun team. Is he a good player? Yeah. Do fans love him? Yeah. Does Sacramento love him? Of course. Does the Kings love him? I think so. That's why they brought him back a couple of times. I just don't think he's a true fit. And honestly, in this rebuilding that they're doing, I don't think Omer Kasmi would really want to come back. Yeah, I think he wants to be on a winning team.
I don't think so either. That was half to see what the reaction was, but I mean, hey, I like the guy. We all know. Anybody who's listened for a while knows I like the team first kind of guys. So I'm a big fan of his, even though I'm not supposed to say I'm a fan of things. But I like those kind of guys. I like the guys who are, you know, team first. It's really simple for me. And I think that's what they're trying to build here.
Omri Kasmi is a really nice guy. Every time you've reached out to him on Twitter, I've reached out to him on Twitter. You know, he's been more than willing to come back. I remember when you wrote your story on your first year here with Sac Kings Nation and stuff. You wrote your story about how the Kings helped you, and you know, I believe he retweeted it and he applauded you or whatever. So you gotta like guys like that. You gotta root for guys like that. Free agency though, last two names I'll bring up, then we'll wrap it up here. Ersan Ilyasova, PJ Tucker are two big character guys. I'm not really on the Ersan Ilyasova part, but I think PJ Tucker brings in that defensive grit, and he was around the Phoenix Suns when they were doing their youth movement, and he was someone that those guys really liked and really looked up to, according to a lot of people that are close to the Suns. So I think he's someone that you're going to want to look at. I think Ersan Ilyasova has been a player that the Kings have shown interest in over the last few years, led the league in charges last season, over the last three seasons now. Can shoot the three-point shot. Not a great rebounder, but 13.1 points, 5.9 rebounds per game. He's someone that you're going to want to keep your eye on. But I'll say this. I think the Kings are definitely going to be trying to get Otto Porter. And if they can't do that, I think they're going to really try their hardest to move Kosta Kufis and bring in – I think they're going to bring in an overpaid player. Could it be an Evan Turner? Could it be an Alan Crabb? Could it be a Luol Deng? And they try and get assets out of that because in 2019 they don't have a draft pick. So that would be a bit disappointing. And I think they know that, especially in a rebuild. So maybe they're willing to take on a bad contract, like a Luol Deng, Alan Crabb, or Evan Turner, and say, hey, that's fine, we'll do this, but you got to give me a first rounder in return, and we'll even give you Kosta Kufis. So that's something I think you're going to have to keep an eye on, but it's going to be a very interesting summer for the Sacramento Kings that kicks off on July 1st, and then you got Summer League on July 7th. Joe, you're going to be there. I'm going to be trying to make my way there. We're going to be giving you guys interviews the best that we can. And, yeah, Joe, any final thoughts?
Yeah, the whole Summer League thing, the whole time that I'm down there, I plan on scouting players. And so I guess on Twitter, what I'd love for you guys to do is if there's anybody that you think you really want to know about, hit me up. And I'll try to get a game on them.
And you're doing this scouting class right there, that big scouting class with Fran Fraschilla, right?
Yeah, that's one of them. I'm taking an 8-week course right now through Sports Management Worldwide, and they do an 8-week course with a handful of different people, obviously teaching it. And then there's a class that they offer on site during Summer League that I'm going to take. And then secondly, there's one through TPG Sports, and I'll be taking that also. I really love going through these classes and seeing if you can pick up any more info, even just one more trick. It's always fun to know the one more trick that the guys behind the scenes know that you don't. You know, what's the one more thing that you should be looking at a guy under the rim, off ball? What do you see that I don't see? And so hopefully I can pick up a couple tricks down there. The other course that looks really fun, and for anybody who's into the backside of basketball, all the numbers, there's a through Sports Management Worldwide, there's a course that is the analytics course, and Dean Oliver teaches it. And I'm really excited to start that here in about a month or two. And again, it's not even about the numbers. It's about finding what numbers you should be looking for. What is the secret stat that you don't know about? And that's fun. I mean, those are the fun kind of things that make you go that distance between a casual fan and a guy who knows the matchup that 1% more. And that's going to be a lot of fun for anybody who's into the NBA.
My final thoughts are the Kings are finally showing a blueprint of what they wanted to do. You haven't seen a roadmap. You haven't seen clarity in this franchise in a very long time. I think that they finally put together a good front office team. I think you're starting to not hear the name of Ekron Adeva as much, which means I think the reins are getting pulled back, and Vlade is creating a team that he's being the face of, but he's letting his guys work. And you have to applaud that. There's nothing guaranteed. De'Aaron Fox could be the next Elfrid Payton, could be the next Rondo and not be good. Justin Jackson could be the next John Salmons, which is not terrible, but he cannot be good. Harry Giles' knees could be so bad that he can only play in a total of 20 games in the NBA. I don't, knock on wood, I don't want to see that happening, but this is a process, and it's the Kings' process, and I think that you're seeing a blueprint of what they want to do, what they're trying to bring in, and you have to be excited as a Kings fan to see what your franchise is moving toward. And, yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think July 7th will be the first time in a very long time that I'm excited to see Summer League. Like, normally I'm only excited because I get to watch basketball instead of just baseball highlights all summer long on ESPN. But I think this will be the first time I'm actually going to be super excited to watch some Summer League basketball, because there's going to be a lot of talented players that are actually playing both in Orlando and in Vegas. And you don't really get to see that. Sometimes Orlando talent is kind of questionable. This year, it looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Also, shout out to Donald. You know exactly who you are. I met him the other day. He was wearing a Cousins jersey. He was talking to me about the Kings, and I told him I'd shout him out, so shouting you out. Follow Joe at SackSportsMorgan on Twitter. I'm at VM Center. Follow the site, SackKingsNation.com, at SKN Articles on Twitter. Subscribe, leave a rating. And until next time, Sacramento Kings fans, bye-bye.